Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. Welcome back from the 4th of July, Independence Day. Probably a pretty important day in America, if you ask me. Kind of the most important day I think we've got. But anyway, we had an interesting day, and I'll give you my phone number here. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. We've been serving the Spokane Northwest region for multiple decades. We operate from one of the finest facilities nationwide. We offer one of the highest ranked privately held depository services. We know coins. We deal in coins. We do portfolios. We really do building portfolios, helping people save money and preserve capital is probably our number one goal, number one focus here. We are high volume buyers. We buy a lot of coins. We sell a lot of coins. We deal in precious metals, always have, always will. We, of course, deal in diamonds. We have an extreme amount of precious stones, but that's another story for another day. If you're looking for any of those kinds of items, just look us up. Our phone number is 444-0044 in Spokane, outside toll free, 877-TAP-COIN. And always through our website at coinsplus.com, where we do publish our previously recorded radio shows. So if you don't catch it during the day or night, or you want to go back and say, did he really say that? Is he that crazy? Or maybe you think I'm losing my mind. You can go back and re-listen and go, yep, he is that crazy. Either that, or maybe you're just bored. You need something to do. Go listen to a radio show. We don't really market that stuff heavy. You know, a lot of people do podcasting, and there's all this. There's a whole nother world out there. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit from the wrong generation. And, you know, there is a whole world of podcasting and social networking, and it's something that we really don't do a very good job at. But then again, I'm not in politics. I'm in business, and so maybe it's not important enough to me or something like that. But we're always here to serve you. Coins Plus has been in business, I think, a fair amount of time. I'm proud of the business. I built it from scratch with the Lord's, I can't even say the Lord's help. I think the appropriate term is God built the business and I've hung on to the reins. It really has very little to do with me and everything to do with God. From the very start of how I got into this business the ways that it came together, it was just all providential miracles all along that built this business back in the 90s. And we've just been in awe ever since. He's blessed us absolutely dearly. He's blessed us with incredible friends, incredible audience of customers, good times, some struggles, obviously. If you don't have struggles in business, you're not in business. We've seen some pretty heavy, times. I was going to say heavy metal times. I think that sounds like rock concerts. We've seen some pretty intense times in the metals. We've seen some big rallies, and we've seen some cooling off periods. But overall, you know, the biggest frustration, I think, for people is when you've got gold at $1,300 and silver at $18 or whatever it is, and people are like, why is it down? And it's so weird to me because I remember fantasizing many moons ago about, gosh, I remember thinking, can you imagine what it would be like if gold was $1,000 an ounce? That was clear back when it was, $300 and some bucks an ounce. And the same with silver. I mean, silver might be 17, 18, but it was 48, a few years back. The thing about it is, folks, it's very well documented. The metals and coins run in 10-year cycles, and I wish I could tell you otherwise, but there's good news to that. And the good news is that they crisscross. So essentially, in the early 2000s, coins peaked out. A decade later, the early 2010s, coins kind of got real flat. And now they're on a roll. They're restructuring. And each time the market just gets smarter and smarter and smarter, which the market on investment grade coins and coin items goes for stuff that's truly collectible, interesting, and hard to find. A lot of companies peddle this high-grade proof this and proof that, and people that don't know anything about coins are like, you know, they get a phone call from a telephone solicitor, I've got an MS-70 gold buffalo, you know, that's super rare and it's perfect, and it really is just a gold buffalo in a fancy holder. And then they try to charge you too much, and they get you all, you know, excited about how great it is, and you're not putting away one of those timeless relics. What they make you think is, you know, the condition is everything on old collectible coins. Condition is not everything on newer bullion coins. They will literally take bullion coins and grade them for perfection, okay? They're all perfect or as close to perfect as you can get. You're not going to detect a difference on any of them. They're designed by computers. The dies are cut by computers. The coins are struck by computers. The planchets are made by computers. The refining is done by a computer. There is virtually very little room for error now. So newer modern coins that are pristine and perfect, great. If you're buying them as bullion coins, great. But don't buy them as if they are collectible. They never will be. A little bit ago, I went through a very sizable accumulation. A guy who had, you know, a very extensive amount of this stuff, and he lived in a very remote area, so he would just buy online, and he thought he was doing really good. And he had just accumulated so darn much of it, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars without talking to anybody. He just didn't realize he could have done so much better with his money. He was collecting coins and buying coins with problems. In other words, you know, getting a nice old collectible coin and maybe it has obvious scratches or stuff on it that someone, you know, he thinks he's bargain hunting. And there's people listening going, that's exactly why I don't want to be into coins. I mean, I may, in a way, it may be like, wow, that's a lot to think about. It's really not. You know, there it's very easy to determine if a coin is what we call original and problem-free. And when it comes to investment-grade coins, older coins, we hand-select all that for you. We take complete responsibility for it. We stand by our product 100% guaranteed in every way, shape, or form. And we do build some really neat portfolios. I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. Probably the biggest drawback of it is the fact that I will literally put collections and investment, you know, I was a collector for years, and all I did is scrounge and hunt for coins. And because I know the scarcity and rarity of many of them, and these are coins that aren't, you know, exotically crazy. They may only be a few hundred bucks or, but because I know the scarcity and rarity of them and the difficulty in locating them and the fact that they're so hard to find, nice and problem free, when I find them, I store them, I locate them, and I accumulate them, and I keep a large inventory of them for you, the customer. I'm your eyes and your ears and your hands, and that's why this stuff is, they're coins that everybody wants everywhere all the time. They're always liquid. They're always in demand. This is the stuff that you balance into a portfolio. So the way we build our portfolios is we, you know, people are different. We have to go different routes. Sometimes we go a lot more numismatic. If somebody just really, I mean, if someone like my mom or a relative, friend or something, if they just simply want to put stuff away for the best long-term return, bar none, we'll do all numismatic coins. Because numismatic coins over time, folks, nothing touches them. People will be like, well, I just want gold and silver. And, you know, it's solid money. It's cash. It's a hard asset. But it does have volatility. Just a fact of life. The thing with precious metals, which are endorsed, authorized, created by God, ordained by God, is they never have and never will lose their value, period. They just won't. The Bible is littered with references to it, with examples pertaining to it, with encouragements to get as much as you can of it, and all the way to the end of the end of the word, it says, at the final bell, the day of wrath, whatever you want to call it, the day of the Lord, we will be casting our gold and silver in the streets because it cannot buy us salvation. Well, the Bible's very clear all throughout about the importance of precious metals and hard assets, but it is even more clear about the fact that your spiritual condition far supersedes anything materialistic you shall ever accumulate. The problem with that is I've had people say, but look, you know, you're saying gold and this, but the Bible says that, you know, basically spiritual peace is more important than riches. Of course it is. Riches are not something that we put our faith in. They're not something that we want to be dependent upon. They're not something that we want to be life-altering. We don't want to worship them. We don't want to covet them. But it is part of the life God gave us. I mean, folks, you got to just accept the way it is, where we're at, how things are set up, and how they work. Our entire world is very simple. It's economic, and unfortunately, it's becoming highly political. There's a religious component. I'm always baffled by people that are raised in a home with absolutely no church exposure whatsoever in the United States of America. The most Christian nation on planet Earth, very possibly the most Christian nation in the history of the world. And so many more and more people are becoming unchurched. It's really sad. And they're getting all these confusing misunderstandings about God and law and freedom of speech and, you know, donations, endowments, whatever you want to call them. I think it's called the Blair Act, which was imposed on, I believe, 39 states in the United States that prevented any religious organization from receiving any type of public funding. In other words, a Christian school could not get any funding to replace a playground like all the other schools could. And so the Blair Act was put in by a guy years back. Obviously, people like this are heels. And luckily, the Supreme Court just overturned this. So now schools will be able to take a new evaluation at what they can, you know, at being at, having access to public school funding to make their schools better. And you must understand that the freedom of speech, or I should say the separation of church and state delusion, was never designed to be abused or misused or misquoted the way it is today. That was never the intent. The intent was just the opposite. That statement by Jefferson of the separation of church and state, the separation of those powers, was a statement of empowerment to a Baptist minister, reverend, that he wrote a letter to. And he said, "Don't have no worries. There is a separation of church and state that will protect you," and so on. And now they've gone literally crazy with this stuff, okay? And the left, the radical left, they don't like it. You know, when, for example, when the Supreme Court sides with, you know, what they call religious schools, you know, whatever you want to call them, in this recent church-state case that just came down, where they ruled in favor of a Missouri church that had sought a state grant to resurface a playground of its preschool. The state, of course, the lower court ruled that the funding violated the constitutional separation of church and state. But then on Monday, the court said that states cannot deny public benefits to religious institutions that are otherwise qualified. This is good. This is the kind of stuff that's happening under Trump. This is taking place based on a number of different reasons, but these are areas of progress. We have so many concepts in government that get abused, folks, abused to the point where they cannot speak truthfully. You can't speak your free mind. There are literally laws that I would say clearly forbid your ability to exercise your free speech. And without free speech, everything else falls apart. When our Constitution was formed and developed by our founding fathers, There's a writing, maybe it's Hamilton, I don't remember who wrote it. He states clearly that when the Constitutional Congress assembled and wrote the Constitution in 1789, that it was a divinely inspired event. There were so many men that were so vehemently opposed to one another that were just vitriolically, rabid towards one another. And yet, he said, when they would get in this room in the Congressional Hall, some peace, when they were writing this law near the end, he said, a peace would come down upon them, a level of wisdom and understanding that gave them, empowered them to do probably one of the greatest political feats in the history of the world. Because not only did we break away from Great Britain and rebel, and not only did we withstand what was hands down the finest, strongest military strength in the world at the time with tenacity, but we constructed a nation that, is one nation under God. I mean, we constructed the ultimate political experiment. Now, we are being fully infiltrated by socialism now, folks, and do not let anyone fool you. This is what is going on. It's easy to cave, okay? It's easy to become more moderate, right? And they convolute so many issues. You debate, you'll be debating with someone over illegal immigrants. And then what do? Suddenly the left, socialistic-minded person, jumps to the fact that, well, this country's built on immigrants. And you're like, wait a minute. We were talking about illegal immigrants, right? They bounce around. They spin plates. That is actually a technique. A debating technique is to continuously move topic, never settle down on one, keep throwing out smokescreen after smokescreen. Because after all that matters to them is to win or lose a debate. How they get there, they don't care. They just want to win or lose the debate. So you'll catch them spinning and turning and twisting and changing. And it is very, very frustrating. And there was, prior to, I knew it was a strategy that I didn't completely know had been in writing until I read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. Saul Alinsky was a real radical. He was a murderer. He was a massive vandalist. These are people that the left admire. And we are coming into this Trump derangement syndrome where we are going above and beyond our means in every single possible way to try to destroy this guy. And it is such a disgrace, such a sad, sad commentary on the state of our union. I don't know quite how else to put it. I just can't believe that we're really in this spot. We've got, we have got our hands really, really full in this nation. And we have got this disrespect that comes as part of this rebellious spirit. You know who the greatest rebellion of all was? Of course, was Lucifer. And you know that Lucifer, the devil, is mentioned in the beginning of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals as his number one, I don't know what you'd call it, for who he admires the most. He basically dedicates the book to Lucifer, the first and true rebel who stood up, and because he stood up, they say, he ended up with his own kingdom. He didn't get his own kingdom, folks. He got his own domain. There is a difference. God said, here, you can take care of some of my land for a while. I will allow you to roam around my people, my creation, for a while. On our time schedule, things may feel like they're long periods. On God's, they're a blip. We don't have any clue about what really took place in heaven with Lucifer. We don't have any clue how amazing he was or when he was created or how beautiful he was or how much domain he had or what his purpose was. I personally believe that Lucifer was one of God's initial free will experiments, I call them, because the early rabbinical writings, early Jewish writings, state that God had made other free will societies, places, what they refer to as earthly worlds with free will beings, and they all were required destruction because of God's justice. God could not tolerate the injustice. These humanoids or consciously aware, situationally aware beings, whatever you want to call us, seem to always migrate towards the black, towards the dark, towards the evil side, and then God wipes it out. Then God makes the most beautiful creation of all ever, which is Lucifer. And Lucifer has some form of free will we don't completely understand. But what we do know is that Lucifer has fully turned his back on God, 100%. We don't know why. We don't understand if he's incapable of repentance. We don't understand if it's a bunch of anger and hatred and vitriol. We don't even know quite what God's location's like. You know, we do know from the book of Job that God allowed Lucifer to come and go at will to discuss specific servants with God. And in one case, Lucifer comes to him and says, "Look at your servant Job." And God said, "Yeah, I like him. Isn't he awesome? He loves me, you know, he obeys me, he respects me, he's got a great family, wonderful business, he does business right, he's not a cheater." And Lucifer says, "Well, sure, he's got everything perfect, God. No wonder he glorifies you. Take it all away, and I'll bet you he'll curse you." So, of course, you know the story of Job. He literally did get it all taken away. He never did curse God. He cursed himself. He cursed the ground he was on. He just was like, "What is going on? It can't get worse than this." All of his friends turned on him and said, "It's your fault. You've got sin in your life. It's got to be something like that." And folks, so we have to be so careful when we're in, about, and around our friends that are struggling. It is not for us to say, "Oh, this is a wrath come from your sin." Because after all, the person saying it very likely could be carrying more sin in their life than the other, and among many other reasons. God does what God does on his time frame. All that matters to God is what happens in those moments after we die. That's when our soul leaves our body. Where does it go? We have had this withheld from us for thousands of years. We don't know. But that's really all that makes a difference, isn't it? And so, you know, we've got to realize that that is at the core of everything. Once man figures that out, he's, you know, he's in good. In the other day, I was reading in Proverbs, I believe, 24, where it says, my son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those who are given to change. Now, when you go into the Hebrew, the word for change is shana, okay? And what shana means is to alter or undertake, to turn over, to rebel. It's to really turn society upside down. And God says in the Bible, avoid those people. Don't be around people. You know, liberalism does mean change. Tradition has its advantages, doesn't it? I mean, it's kind of like I always say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But what happens in this country that makes things broke so we got to fix them? Number one catalyst of this, I believe, to be attorneys. Attorneys have come into this nation. They have utterly destroyed it, in my opinion. Everything is up for grabs. It's absolutely heinous. Today, I was doing some research, I guess you could call it, and I came across this whole situation in California over the Made in USA thing. The reason you see less and less items that say Made in America or Made in the USA is very simple. It's because if you built anything, if you built a radio, if you built an iPhone, if you built a car motor, if you built a flashlight, if it has one screw or one O-ring or one item in it anywhere that was imported from anywhere other than America, even though it was built here, it cannot be called Made in America. At first glance, you're like, well, no, duh, that makes perfect sense. But then you get to the point where I was listening to a guy talk, where a lot of these items, they are not manufactured here, period. Like the O-rings for a Maglite flashlight, or, you know, little screws for an iPhone or whatever like that. They're made in Taiwan or China or whatever. It may be one little screw. And where's this coming from? Attorneys have been suing on this topic numerous times to companies that have claimed Made in America, and they literally go through and they do discovery and they make them prove that one little tiny screw in that phone or in that, you know, whatever the contraption or device is, one tiny little minuscule part may be from somewhere else, and therefore it's no longer Made in America. Three major settlements over that. And what's ridiculous is the person that is suing through the attorney will get these multi-million dollar settlements. Why? Why is it that if somebody says, I thought my flashlight was made in America, and I found that one little tiny screw was made in Taiwan, I'm going to sue for $5 million, and for what? Pain and suffering because you found out that one of the screws on your $10 flashlight wasn't made in the United States? I mean, this is what we've done. This is what attorneys have done to America. Another area of grave concern in my mind is the rapid onset of the police state. It is getting to a point where it is patriotic to support the police, okay? We need them. And they are, you know, and I know many, many high-ranked, extremely well-trained tactical special operators in the United States military, the best of the best. Fortunately or unfortunately, some of the best assassinators in the world, okay? And these men have a level of humility. They have a level of appreciation. They have a level of honor. But when I go to local police, I'm not seeing that proper spirit. I'm seeing a spirit of collusion. I'm seeing a spirit of deception. I'm seeing a spirit of harassment. I've had my share, personally, individually, where they are not forthright on reasons they might have pulled you over, you know, that kind of stuff. It's absolutely not what it used to be. We're getting into a tough, tough spot where they're talking. You know, it's just getting real interesting. They're starting, they're starting to be the cops all over the lake, and, you know, and they're young. And they believe they're doing well, and they take themselves extremely seriously. Some of the worst are the state patrol. You know, they basically give tickets and visit wrecks, and they, you know, it's just, I know it is so politically incorrect to address this topic, but just a few weeks ago, there was a police officer who was exonerated by a jury in a shooting that the wife videotaped. Probably one of the most sad situations I've ever seen in print, in video. Everyone who saw it knew for a hands-down fact the cop was going to go down hard. Everyone knew it. There was no debate. Well, they were able to get the cop off, sadly, And the way they did it was they had this big, long, extensive videotape, I call it, being my age. And on that tape, they were able the defense attorney was able to convince the prosecutor to remove the entire video of any interest at all. In other words, to be able to completely eradicate everything on the video of any relevance whatsoever. What they left on the video was so irrelevant and inconsistent and inconsiderate, it did nothing to help the case. And so the jury had to go with the preponderance of evidence or whatever it is that's overwhelming, and they had to turn around and give it up. And it's super sad, okay? I mean, there has got to be justice. Police are police. They hear stories every time a police officer in the nation dies on duty. And we're like, oh, it's a tragedy. It's happening more and more. No, it's becoming more and more publicized. But in general, it's not increasing at all. There's people dying in every walk of life every day. It just doesn't get the publication that the death of a police officer on duty does. I'm not saying at all that, you know, they're not doing a great job, they don't have the same responsibilities, that we don't need to respect them. None of that. I do. But I just really, it scares me. It all started with that show Cops, 20-some years ago, the first reality TV show, which I loved. And I thought at that time they were going to make, I thought at that time it would make cops a little more, oh, it has made them a lot more careful, but a little more cool, calm, and deliberate. Well, apparently that doesn't sell ratings. And one officer that I heard on a talk show years back said that the reporter or the recorder guy, the cameraman, on a cop shooting told the cop, look, man, you got to amp this up. He said, if you just give everybody a warning, that doesn't make good Hollywood. And so the cop said, he was like, well, okay, if my boss sent you here. And so they started to amp up their chases, amp up their everything. And it got really, really intense. And then it became more acceptable and cooler, and it gets the ratings, and now everything's based on ratings, which is a very significant concern of mine, when we have gotten to that point where we're so plugged into the television or audio video, we don't even know whether we're coming or going. I'm bouncing around today. Obviously, it's the day after the 4th. There's just kind of a mirage of information. North Korea comes back to my mind again. North Korean issues are, building. I've done some research recently on North Korean defectors. These are people that have gotten out, and they are telling us that the level of torture and starvation is at a peak level beyond anything you can comprehend. The communist state is brutal. They torture publicly and destroy people publicly for no reason. They're paranoid. They're afraid. They won't stop. And they are testing more and more nuclear warheads. Now they're getting, delivery vehicles, missiles that can carry these warheads that we believe we know they have. They're threatening to use them against the United States, South Korea, and Japan. And you think, well, we're pretty far away. There's one big issue. 2018, folks. In 2018, the Olympics are in South Korea. North Korea's next door neighbor. North Korea could lob bombs over there. I'm telling you, it's not far. It's really not far at all. My understanding is it's just miles. And should they choose to do that, strategically, they're very paranoid. They're a regime whose primary goal is self-subsistence. In other words, they don't want to grow in strength and power. They just want to stay in existence. So they fight to maintain that. And depending on the level of insanity or intelligence they have, they may choose to do some things that could be extraordinarily detrimental to our global scene. They could do it in a way that would make it extraordinarily hard for us to retaliate, because there's people everywhere. And we consider one casualty too many casualties, and we will avoid major sting operations or, you know, huge takedowns of enormous ISIS pockets. We will avoid it because we literally want to save one or two lives. We just don't want to kill them. That is a sign of humanity that we have in our own system. So North Korea could lob bombs into South Korea, cause absolute mayhem and chaos during the Olympics, and nobody might want to retaliate against North Korea because the people are so embedded and ingrained in the lifestyle that they literally, I don't know, you know, they you just don't know what would happen. And this is my understanding of what the struggle is that people in general, you know, we just want to avoid casualties. So if North Korea lobs this stuff, then what would our proper course of action be? Storm North Korea? I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I do think it's a real tough dilemma. I think there comes a time and a place where you need to step it up. You know, there's all kinds of nations that are mentioned in end times prophecy that I'm not sure. I haven't done my research on North Korea lately, but it's very possible that old geographic references to them may still exist. The Bible will often either refer to the nationality of a people or a geographic location when describing a future event that either happens to the people or the place. And that those definitions will remain static because the geographic location hypothetically doesn't change much other than the little mini micro evolution post flood. And it's the same with humanity. There's people that claim that the Bible speaks of a devastating U.S. nuclear war at end times. I've read it. I've seen it. I believe they believe it. And it's difficult to know. You know, and we need to pray that America doesn't get destroyed. As tensions between the U.S. and North Korea continue to burgeon on, we just don't know, folks. We don't know. But the conflict with North Korea has escalated dramatically recently. And, you know, due to Kim Jong-un literally being a lunatic, I think it was, I don't know, a couple weeks ago when President Trump said it's possible the U.S. could have, quote, a major, major conflict with North Korea if Kim continues with his nuclear ambitions. So this year alone, the North Korean regime has launched 7 missile tests, and their state-run media claimed a couple months ago that the country is preparing to launch a super mighty preemptive strike against the U.S. if necessary, which was a declaration that came as the Trump administration kept trying to put pressure on this hermit leader, this hidden regime, who just poisoned his brother to death, by the way. So I don't know. I don't want to spend too much time on North Korea, but I can tell you, you know, if you read in Timothy, 1 Timothy 1, it says, I exhort you, therefore, that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. Okay? So when I read the scripture earlier, Proverbs 24, about, you know, God says, stay away from those who are given to change. Stay away from those who constantly want to disrupt and question everything and be skeptical. Don't get me wrong. We've got issues. We've got problems. We're human beings, right? There's always little things stuffed in the closet. But overall, you know, we have got to accept as much tradition and stability as we can. It's the way we're made. Early on, a lot of these kingdoms were formed. The hierarchy was developed. The system was created. There isn't a lot to change in some cases. Even our system, what our founding fathers did. What's crazy is when we get more and more Supreme Court justices making more and more liberal decisions that really are somewhat unconstitutional. That's a concern for the future because it's politically correct. So once again, Timothy says, I exhort you, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men. He goes again, kings, and all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty, for this is good and acceptable in the sight of our God and our Savior. This is the way God wants it. If you have to jump up, grab what little you have left and run with your family or whatever else. Folks, that is change, right? That's big change. You do not want to engage in that. You do not want to drag your family through that. You want no part of that kind of a life. That's why God in this scripture says, pray for all that are in authority and all men that what? We may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. Okay, so, you know, we've got to realize, folks, that this shows us how much free will we have. It shows you the power of prayer. When people are kicking back and saying, hey, it's all up to God, I trust him for the end game, we know how the Bible turns out, we don't need to worry about it. Well, really? Well, then why would he say, you pray for all these people, for every man, and especially kings and rulers and those in authority, because we don't want war on our soil. We don't want our lives turned upside down. Even King David or Solomon said, avoid those who are given to change. This means we have free will, folks. I just really want you to spend time and think about that. Far too many people have the attitude that they're jumping on a bus and they're along for the ride and God's the driver. And that when he wants them out, he'll let them know, and otherwise they need to just sit there and shut up. And that's not God at all. He wants us out moving and shaking and making a name for him in the world. Very, 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 very much so. I just believe in so many different ways we're just facing such potentially rough times. We've got ISIS in Syria heading, I would say, towards their, I think they're leading us, baiting us in, heading towards stage 7 of world Muslim domination, okay? And what do I mean about that? I've gone through the 20-year, 7-step process by which was written in the 90s, by which Islam intends to dominate the entire globe, and we are now heading into the 7th stage of 7 over a 20-year period of time that they say are ended by 2020. That a big war breaks out in 2018. This stuff was written long ago, folks. ISIS is tough stuff. We've got ISIS has maps of Europe showing areas that they want to dominate. They really have a long war ahead of them, a very, very long war ahead of them. And they're not willing to quit until everyone's involved. Why? Because that is when the Mahdi, their Messiah, can come back. So we've discussed the phases in the past. The first phase was the awakening, 2000 to 2003. That's, you know, obviously past. Then there was the second phase, opening the eyes, which is the period where terrorists hope to make the Western conspiracy aware of the Islamic community. We have the third phase of the Islamic 20-year, seven-step world domination. Third phase is called Arising and Standing Up, which they planned or predicted would last from 07 to 10, where the focus would go on to Syria. Now, Syria was, people don't realize, Syria was at the heart of the Benghazi issue because Obama was transporting all of these weapons he'd confiscated from Muammar Gaddafi. He was transporting them to Syria. Who's bad? Bashar al-Assad is bad, bad. And he was transferring those weapons to him, supposedly for what reason, I don't know. But those weapons were getting handed over to ISIS. Now we are fighting a major band, a major, I guess they call it a state, Islamic State, with our own weaponry in mass for free. I don't think it was an accident Obama did this. I really don't. That's third phase. Fourth phase is the 2010 to 13, okay? On the third phase, like I said, was 2007 to 10. Obama got in about what? 08, where the focus on Syria began. The fourth phase, 2010 to 13. Obama still, where they claimed that Al-Qaeda would aim to bring about the collapse of the hated Arabic governments, Muammar Gaddafi, Hosni Mubarak, now maybe King Assad in Saudi Arabia or in Syria, we don't know. But they just want to get rid of everybody they disagree with. Very liberal mindset, very godless mindset. No good, you're a puppet, do whatever happens and works. So that's the fourth phase, which they estimate, you know, through 13, which they call the creeping loss of the regime's power that they predicted would lead to a steady growth in the strength within Al-Qaeda, which, you know, we know about Al-Qaeda. The fifth phase, the point at which an Islamic State or caliphate will be declared, between 2013 and 16. ISIS or ISIL, that's exactly when they popped up, folks. That's exactly when they became recognized, made themselves known. Obama showed them all this honor and respect, very disrespectful to the United States, to the citizens of this country. They say Western influence in the Islamic world will be so reduced and Israel will be weakened so much that resistance will not be feared. Al-Qaeda hopes that by then, what? The Islamic State will be able to bring about a new world order. That's 2013 through 16. This was written back in the 90s, folks. I've gone over this, and if you're like, God, that Kevin's just a broken record. The reason I am, folks, I think this is super serious. I think this is the greatest threat to one of the greatest threats to the United States of America. And the world, you know, time and again, we've got darkness that will overtake this globe. If you really think about it, we've got to be so careful. There was a time where Hitler literally almost got into office. The question really remains how, you know, how much prayer was going up at that time. And I assume not much, because I don't think until we went to Normandy people really understood what exactly was going on or what exactly we were doing. And so I think that you know, people were generally oblivious to what exactly was going on in the world. So the sixth phase, 2016 on, a period of total confrontation. As soon as the caliphate has been declared by the Islamic army, right, we've got it, ISIS, chopping heads off, doing all their crazy stuff, it will instigate the fight between the believers and the non-believers, which has so often been predicted by Osama bin Laden. Again, that was 2016 forward. That was sixth phase. But phase seven says that, now, folks, I'll repeat again. This was prophesied in the 90s. Okay, this is not written after the fact. This is prophesied in the 90s. About the future trending of the Islamic State, of ISIS, of Islam, of Muslims, whatever you want to call them. It was the track they were on. It was timing, very much inspired by a dark spirit, because its accuracy is nerve-wracking, to be honest with you. And the seventh phase is, they say, it's the obviously the final stage described as definitive victory, where in the terrorists' eyes, because the rest of the world ends up so beaten down and burned out and just tired out from the fact that there's a minimum of 1.5 billion Muslims on this earth, not million, billion with a B, that the caliphate almost has to succeed. You know, I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, undoubtedly, in this phase, phase seven, should be completed, they say, by 2020, although the war probably won't last more than 2 years. So without, you know, without further ado, the bottom line is, to me, folks, that's hands down the biggest threat to America. I personally believe, from a financial perspective, I personally believe that you need to be prepared heavily. I believe that you need to have precious metals and a nice portfolio, a 401k and IRA rollover. I believe you need to be liquid and anonymous and transportable and ready to go at any time. I think God made it that way on purpose for a great, great reason. It leaves no room for doubt. And last, folks, I ended the show last week with a quote from Dana Loesch, a very conservative talk show host, from a commercial that she did for the NRA. And it's interesting. I'll read it here again. But she took heat and fire on this so bad. They are starting so much to rip into this stuff that you should see the headlines on this when I do research on it. Scary new NRA ad reads like a call to arms against resistance. And then another thing is saying, chilling NRA ad promotes guns as a solution to what it depicts as a dystopian society based on radical liberal ideas. These are headlines from things like CNN or Advocate.com, or here's Gunned Down, PBS. The headline says, "The powerful NRA calls its members to arm up against what they call radical left-wing liberalism." This stuff is so deceptive. I mean, today, I won't go into the CNN issue today about the kid who had the social media stuff posted where they basically extorted and blackmailed him and said, if you don't take it down, this is CNN, take it down or we will release your name to everybody. Freedom of speech. They don't believe in it, folks. There's just been some really good NRA ads, in my opinion. I've enjoyed them. They talk about video games and, you know, how it's just twisting America up. They have, you know, they mention their members. They have a 4 million member base of mothers, fathers, sons, daughters. Anyway, there's others here that I would love to read, but I'm always out of time. And this one more time, it says he's got stuff that, you know, he says, now I can imagine the shocking headlines you'll print tomorrow. It says, as parents, we do everything. Oh, boy, I don't know if I have time to read all this. Boy, that's a nice commercial. The media call semi-automatic firearms machine guns. They claim these civilian semi-automatic firearms are used by the military, and they tell us that the .223 round is one of the most powerful rifle calibers, when all of these claims are factually untrue. They don't know what they're talking about. Worse, they perpetuate... I don't have time to read all this, but basically they say, as brave, heroic, and self-sacrificing as those teachers were in those classrooms, this is after a shooting, and as prompt, professional, and well-trained as those police were when they responded, they were unable, through no fault of their own, to stop it. And then he goes on to explain that's not their job. Their job is to react to the call. They can't be in all places at all times. And we need to understand that. We can't expect them to. The ad from Dana Lash, you know, basically talks about, simply put, the importance of our right to bear arms, I guess. And I guess I'm going to have to just leave it at that for the sake of time and the sake of my computer. So we're back from the 4th of July, which is a huge day for us. It's our biggest day at our house other than Christmas. We love it. We have friends over. We have a great day. And we boat, but we get a room at the Coeur d'Alene Resort and watch the fireworks and everything because it's a huge day. It's important. Call Coins Plus, folks. Get yourself secured professionally. We've got a great inventory, great staff. I guess I'm out of time. Take care. God bless. I will. I'll be back on Friday, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about some of this stuff. Bye-bye.